You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. Wayne, the market started the second quarter a little bit unpleasantly in the United States because people were saying now that, we're not going to get an interest rate cut in June because the inflation is still rather stubborn. I won't use sticky, I'll use stubborn. And also other economic data suggests that they don't need to cut rates at the time. And then today we've got Eurozone inflation coming in at just 2.4%. Better than expected. So it's almost though they're hanging on the words of central bankers.
Yes, well, we have been for a long time. I mean, until there's a definitive move in the actual inflation data numbers, we'll be hanging on what there is, how all the central bankers interpret the current set of circumstances. You know, in December it was all bullish, then it was all bearish for January, February, and halfway through March, then it started to become a little bit bullish again.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's actually quite interesting. You can judge what the Reserve Bank is saying by looking at what Anglo American share price is doing.
Yeah, so
Went up enormously in December. Then it totally and utterly collapsed in January. Then it had a little bit of a revival in the beginning of February where the mood of central bankers changed a little bit, and then from halfway through March has had a strong recovery again. Not quite where it was at the end of December, but certainly a lot better than where it was at the beginning of January.
So what you're saying is
you can literally judge what the central bankers are saying by what the Anglo-American share price is doing.
So Anglo-American share price is essentially a proxy for monetary policy overseas. So, and the theory being, I suppose, is if they're going to cut rates, then that will weaken the US dollar and boost the price of commodity prices. Yeah, exactly. Especially the suite of products that Anglo-American has.
Demand itself will also boost the price. I mean, demand itself will also boost the price of commodities.
Yeah. Well, let's hope so. I personally think that the Monday and Tuesday mini rout of the US markets, and it was a mini rout, is just a natural short-term cycle. And I still think they're going to cut rates, and I still think the market's going to love it. What about you?
Yeah, I'm also saying that I'm firmly of that view, in fact.
Good.
That they are going to cut rates and that we will see hopefully some recovery in the rand, some recovery in commodity prices and commodity shares. But understand, if we write on the rate cuts, it's a whole cycle, eh? You know, that we should be in a 2-year, 3-year cycle of lower interest rates, which is extremely good for commodity exporting countries like South Africa.
Again, what you're saying is that this isn't just a once-off event. If they do cut rates, say, for example, in June, it's not just a once-off to appease the markets. And because Joe Biden phoned up Chairman Powell and said, listen, I've got an election coming up which I want to win. Please give me a helping hand. This is something that they consider, and as you say, goes for a considerable period.
Yeah, and look, it might not be the case in every country in the world, but certainly in the major countries in the world and including South Africa, the Reserve Bank is actually independent of politicians.
Yes.
And I think we can be so grateful for that specifically in South Africa. If we go back to the state capture years, I mean, the one institution that stayed away from state capture for years and years and years was SARS.
Yeah.
You know, and then eventually that was half captured, you could say, or fully captured. Then the Department of Finance stayed away from state capture, even though they tried extremely hard with, I forget who the minister was for a very short while. All I can remember is he loved very fancy suits. Just cannot remember. Gigaba, that's right, I think it was.
That's right, yeah.
So, that was half captured, but the Reserve Bank has never even come even under threat of capture in South Africa, and thank goodness for that. And I mean, just on the state capture whole story, you know, no matter what faults the current administration has done, they have stopped state capture. I mean, they haven't prosecuted the people responsible for it yet, They haven't reversed all of the ills that it caused yet, but state capture is actually behind us now. You know, all of those nefarious people you were responsible for that are no longer in the real positions of power. And we just hope that we do reverse the ill effects of state capture and how it incapacitated our institutions. But at least state capture has been stopped. And that we must concede that the current administration did do that.
Yes, okay, but there's no overt state capture. But unfortunately, the effects are still being felt, and we saw that in the budget. We're repeating ourselves here. I mean, the larder has been raided in the budget.
Correct.
And it leaves us in a sort of precarious position. When I say us, I mean South Africa, in a precarious position. So the effects are still being felt, and there is still massive wastage in the public sector. I mean, Eskom still horrible. And I don't know if they've completely eradicated the fraud in that particular institution, which is so important.
No, totally. Totally, I agree with that.
Yes, good. How's the load shedding at the moment? There hasn't been any outcry as far as I can see from where I am.
No, well, there is no load shedding at the moment.
Good.
It's actually been suspended for the last week or so. Although, yeah, at my garage in Kaya Sands, we pray for load shedding because, yeah, the power just goes out for 2 days. Because of whatever fault, and it went out today at 2 o'clock. There's no load shedding, and who knows when it comes back on. And this is unfortunately quite a regular occurrence here. And it's not just, yeah, it's a whole area that goes down. I mean, a very large area, and who knows what the inherent fault is. But anyway, that's beside the point. That's not what we had to discuss.
No, it's not, actually. And now we're going to the second quarter. You're sticking to your guns. And again, I asked this question so many times, and you're very stoic, and you're like a rock, Wayne. You just say, no, I'm sticking with the commodities, the positions that I've built up, and the banks, etc. You're not sort of saying, okay, well, I need a bit of this, I need a bit of that to embellish my portfolio. You're staying with your stalwarts.
No, look, I mean, our portfolios are very well diversified. You know, as I've said on numerous occasions, diversification's the only thing you get for free in investments. The rest you sometimes pay a very dear price for, either experiences or learning, you know, paying school fees. But diversification is just for free. So our portfolios are very well diversified. So we have got essentially a little bit of everything. So we've got all the US tech, we've got SA retailers, but our portfolios are a little bit slanted towards mining shares and resource shares.
Yeah.
So that's the portfolio. My own personal view, you know very well, I think that's going to be the outperforming sector for the next 2 to 3 years. Maybe even one of the best performing sectors in the world for the next 2 or 3 years, because that's what happens in the commodity upcycle. Same as they are the worst performing sectors for 2 or 3 years in a commodity down cycle, they can beat everything else hands down in a commodity upcycle. So if we go back and we think of 2002 through to 2008, platinum shares were the NVIDIAs of the day. You know, they were the growth shares. They were the tech shares of the day. Then from 2016 to, I think, 2019, the mining shares knocked the socks off anything that moved. I mean, Anglo American went from $50 to $800. You know, so if the conditions are right, these shares can dramatically outperform just about everything else. But of course, then you must remember to sell, because these are heavily cyclical shares.
Yeah.
And they're actually terrible shares over time. They're actually not, you know, widows and orphans. It's the old so-called blue chip share. They're just not. But, I mean, just on blue chips. The blue chips from 30 years ago that David and I remember very well, I mean, Bidvest is still around, you know. They're still around. All the other Bidvest, Bidcorp, and they're still blue chip. All the other blue chips we had there are either non-existent or have ceased to be blue chips. Like Nampak was a blue chip in the 90s. It was a fantastic company. Liberty, now I'm not saying Liberty is a bad company, but I don't think you can view Liberty as the outperforming blue chip that it used to be in the 90s. Pick and Pay was a blue chip in the 90s. You know, so these things change over time. Companies either just disappear or, you know, they don't adapt to circumstances, or circumstances leave some companies behind. You know, this is a dynamic thing. I'm sure in 30 years' time, 20 years' time, the tech shares won't be the blue chips anymore. You know, there'll be something else, because these things just do change over time.
What about old blue chips? I mean, would you consider, for example, two names I've just scribbled down, Marianne Roberts and PPC. Were they ever blue chips?
No, I don't think they ever were blue chips.
Okay.
You know, I think almost by definition, a building and construction company is too volatile to be a blue chip. And the same with the mining company. It's just, they're just too volatile to be blue chips. So me, the epitome of a blue chip share is Bidcorp, Bidvest.
Okay.
You could even argue 20 years ago, 15 years ago, that the cell phone companies were blue chips. But that's no longer the case
now. Definitely not. No, they're utilities.
Definitely
now.
Not.
Yeah, and those aren't blue chips. Wayne, so what you're saying is, in summary, is when a trend in commodities starts to emerge, it's not like a short-term trend in a risky asset like a cryptocurrency or something. It just goes on a charge, and you better not stand in its way. Just like certain currencies go on these massive long-term trends, like the Japanese yen weakening, for example. It doesn't stop. It doesn't give you a chance to reverse your position. It just goes on and on, and that's what you're hoping for, a super or a mini super cycle in commodities.
Yeah, look, I don't think it's going to be anything like the China years, because that was highly unusual. But the only in extent was it unusual. The circumstances were actually quite similar to where they were now. In the 90s, no one wanted to touch a commodity share. Commodities were history. You know, dot-com was taking over. Financial services were taking over. And as a consequence, the mining companies didn't invest really anything into capital for a decade. And then, of course, China happened. And so you got this massive surge in demand into an environment where there was no capital expenditure. So the prices just rocketed through the roof. Now, the circumstances now are similar. In other words, mining companies haven't spent money for 8 years. Very little expansion. I mean, they all almost went bankrupt in 2015. And they've spent what cash flows they do get, which has been significant up until 2 years ago. There was an upcycle from 2016 through to two, 3 years ago. They just repaired their balance sheets and paid out dividends to long-suffering shareholders. And now, hopefully, with lower interest rates, we get a bit of a recovery in global growth. And that recovery will be into an environment where there's no new supply coming on stream. So the conditions are similar to 2003. Just the demand side, I don't think, will nearly be as big as the China years. Of course, at some stage, India will be China.
Yeah.
You know, at some stage, the Indian economy will take, well, it's already going strong, but that will take off and go through the roof and generate quite a substantial demand for commodities, because their infrastructure in India is a little bit shot. So they'll be building roads and bridges and power stations and factories, you know, but I don't think that's now. I don't know, but I don't think so. But at some stage, you know, India will be a China. It won't even be a mini China. You know, it's got the capacity to be another China, as China was 20 years ago.
And it's also got demographics on its side. It's got demographics on its side as well, because it's not an aging population, whereas China, Japan, and many European countries are. It is still
all aging.
It's still still youthful, and it's the most populous country in the world, as we know. So the power of India in the future is going to be China revisited, I would say. Now, Wayne, just one other thing before we get on to food, and that is the gold price, nearly $2,300.
I can't believe it. Yeah,
you and Shapiro don't touch it, because I don't know why. Well, maybe you do. I know David doesn't.
I've been burned too many times, my boy. Been burned too many times. That's why you don't touch it.
Yeah. What do you make of it, though? It was a Sunday night, and when the markets obviously open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, but suddenly when a decent market opened in the Far East on Sunday, the gold was up $30 an ounce. and Bitcoin doing what it's doing, I mean, are people really genuinely scared, or are they selling US treasuries in China and buying gold? Have you any idea what can explain this enormous move?
No, I can't. I don't get it. Look, I mean, just to come back to what you said earlier on, with Bitcoin also going through the roof. I mean, gold has always been a Bitcoin, eh? You know, gold, there's no source of where gold comes from. You know, anyone worldwide will exchange gold for services and goods. You can smuggle gold across borders. It hasn't got a nationality. You know, you can store it under your mattress and it holds value. So gold and Bitcoin are actually relatively similar.
Yes.
In respect of their characteristics. But why they're running, I don't know, because in theory, they shouldn't be running. Well, gold now, once again. In theory, gold should not be running because inflation is falling, not rising.
Yeah.
Secondly, interest rates are high, which, you know, is quite a negative for gold because it carries no yield. So the traditional circumstances that should pull gold up are in fact not there at all. In fact, the circumstances are that should push gold down, and yet it's running.
I think it's geopolitics.
So I just don't understand.
I think it's geopolitics. I think it is.
It could be politics. It could be the wars, the various wars that are going on.
Exactly.
It could be the prospect of having Donald Trump back in the White House.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Chill went through me
maybe,
then.
Yeah, but unfortunately, look, make no mistake, a chill goes through me as well. But I quite honestly think it's highly likely. I think he's got a very good chance of winning. Because, you know, I listened to an interview, which was very interesting. I listened to an interview of some South African guy who won one of those strange wrestling, boxing, MMA, mixed martial arts, blah, 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 whatever it's called, title.
Yes.
And it was a world title. So he was being interviewed by journalists from all over the world, giving his victory speech or his little speech, whatever. And one of the journalists asked him, you know, you South African, what do you think about South Africa, et cetera, et cetera? So he said, the government has messed it up, essentially. So that message isn't new.
Yeah.
You know, Eskom and Transnet and state capture and all of these things. He said the government, in many, many more words than that, he said the government has messed it up. And then the journalist, who was an American, asked him, but does your president know that he's president? And he sort of like hesitated for a while and thought for a while. He says, yes, our president does know that he's president, but he's not doing a good job, blah, 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 or all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And then the journalist piped up as a quip. He says, well, we're not sure whether our president actually knows he's president or not, or even if he knows what day of the week it is.
Oh, that's unfair. But I'm
just saying this is what the journalist said.
Yes.
In other words, surely the Democratic Party could have come up with a better candidate to fight Trump than the current president. I don't know. I mean, they're both ancient, but Biden's even more ancient.
Yeah, he's more doddery. But why is the Secretary of State, what's his name, Blinken, why hasn't he put himself forward? I mean, he travels around the world constantly shuttling between the United States and the Middle East and Europe, gathering together leaders and talking about what to do about Gaza. And yet he hasn't put himself forward. Maybe I've got the whole system wrong. He's a Democrat, obviously. But
Look, I think it is so traditional for the sitting president of a first-term sitting president to get that party's nomination for the second term.
Anyway,
I cannot think of an exception where that didn't happen.
That's very true. Nor can I, not in recent history anyway. There's a film coming out quite soon, Wayne, starring the excellent actress Kirsten Dunst. It's called Civil War, and it's a look at America at war with itself. I mean, two sides coming against each other, and there is a president who refuses to leave the White House, who bears a remarkable resemblance, or rather has all the characteristics of you-know-who. Mm. I don't want to say his name on this podcast. And And so I think people, it's in people's consciousness at the moment in America that the country is divided, and that is so dangerous for everyone, I think.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm not an American expert, and just looking at it from the sidelines, it does appear to be more divided than their normal politics.
Yeah.
You know, normally the Democrats and the Republicans really differed on domestic issues. They didn't really differ on global issues. You know, Russia was always the enemy, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas certainly with Trump in the system, you know, that the traditional external policies of America have been shaken up quite a few, you know, quite a bit. And certainly domestically, yeah, it seems very divided.
It certainly is. We won't be divided on the next subject, because I got a phone call from my butcher the other day, Wayne, and he said, Mr. Williams, new season lamb is in now. And it says it's been an exceptional lambing season because it was a warm and wet winter, so the ewes were fed on really, really lush grass and herbs and everything, and the new lamb has the most beautiful taste. And so I went and bought a shoulder of lamb. I bunged it in my croisette on a bed of rosemary, garlic and onions, and then I poured a little bit of red wine in there, and I cooked it for 3 hours. Well, I didn't even need a knife. I just looked at the thing, and it fell off the bone. It was sensational, and I know you're a big lamb fan.
Well, that sounds fantastic. Now, I am a big lamb fan.
Yeah.
I will be honest and say I'm not the biggest fan of the fall-off-the-bone type of cooking. I prefer a little bit of crispy, but yes, it does sound delicious.
It was.
But I also had a culinary experience. Went to go visit our friends in Bella Bella.
That's right, you had a braai, didn't you?
And at a braai, it was fantastic, but it was one of the side dishes to the braai that was truly outstanding, and that was a potato bake.
Oh, lovely.
With crispy onions in it and little pieces of bacon, and it was so delicious, and we were most fortunate enough to be given the leftovers to bring back to our place.
A doggy bag.
And then on Sunday night, we had potato bake and samosa festival.
That does sound good.
I had gone.
Strange combination, but very good, yeah.
Yeah, and that is quite strange. But I'd gone around to my favorite samosa supplier, which is a haberdashery shop here in Kaya Sands that sells samosas sort of at the little tuck shop restaurant that they've got there, and they are truly delicious samosas. So I bought cheese and corn.
Yeah.
I bought 12. I bought 12 chicken and 12 beef, and I froze most of them because you can't eat that quantity in one day. And then on Sunday, we took them frozen out of the freezer and deep fried them in oil. I don't like excess oil, so we always put them on kitchen towels and sort of pat all the excess oil out of them. And then we had samosa festival and potato bake festival. And it was truly, truly delicious.
And tell me something, did your dog get any scraps of the samosas, or are they too spicy?
No, you won't. That's way too spicy for you.
Okay, all right. Well, Wayne,
also, dogs can't have potato either, I don't think.
Well, I don't think.
They certainly can't have the onions that are in the potato bake. So he got dog biscuits, but he was quite happy. He doesn't mind getting dog biscuits.
Okay, good. I do, on the other hand. You made me hungry again. I'm going to rummage through the pantry for a moment before my dinner. Wayne, thank you very much for your time as always. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg, and that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.